This week on RSBNB Update, the early player experience is buffed yet again, alongside QOL changes making Solak scalable. Plus news and previews from the core experience team on outlining, canopy cutouts, movement prediction, and a demo of RuneScape Mobile on iOS. This is RSBNB Update, episode 767, recorded Thursday, March 5th, 2020. Cutting to the core. Hello, everybody, and thank you for joining us for another episode of RSBNB Update this week, episode 767. Solak scaling and Nipper Demon pets is our headlining update, but of course, we'll get to all that good stuff in just a moment. Tanis, you're here as you are each and every week. Welcome back.
Thanks, Shane.
And also joining us this week, fresh off of our monthly bit recording, an Iron Man primary player with 200 million XP in construction. And, you know, that's an achievement on its own for an Iron Man, but also number one on the Iron Man tables for construction. Rastafel, welcome aboard to this episode of RSBNB Update.
Thanks. Glad to be here.
We just had a very fun monthly bit recording where we spent an hour and a bit talking all about Iron Man, which, I mean, the stuff we learn from these monthly bits, it's truly invaluable. That's my favorite part of this Patreon stuff for the time being. I say that until movie night happens and we see what we wind up seeing on that. But, of course, that's a topic we'll be sorting out. We should have some news for you guys next week on that, what we're going to be doing with that and how it's going to work. But nonetheless, this week we do have a bit of an update and some patch notes and a live stream talking about core experience. So we're going to have a chat with Rastafa about this, Tanis and myself. And, you know, before we get underway, I'll just tell everybody that if you want to follow along in the show notes, you can find that at update.rsbnb.com, and I am Shane12088 in game. He is Tanis79, and I think we're about ready to go. Sound good, you guys?
Let's go.
All right. So we got scalable Solak. Have you ever fought Solak as an Iron Man?
No, I haven't.
Okay. Well,
the two bosses I've never done.
Okay. Well, I mean, I guess you could put them on your list after this, because back in 2018, when Solak was released, they only had two man and seven man mode. And, you know, we initially wanted to have David on the podcast this week to talk about this, but the timing just didn't work out. But I did have a bit of a chat with him about the impact of this between two-man and seven-man. And, you know, he said the biggest thing that PVMers face when trying to get a group together is that seven-man is too hard to try and wrangle that many friends up to go and kill a boss. And the sweet spot is really 3 to 4, which, you know, has also been proven before in surveys that Jagex has put out. And, you know, with that, that's what this update is all designed to correct. Scalable Solak, so that depending on how many people you bring in, whether it's 2 all the way up to a maximum of 7, the boss will just scale and become more difficult based on your group size with this. And, you know, I think one of the biggest things that we can take away from this is that this is more an accessibility change for the boss rather than it is fundamentally changing the essence of the boss and moving forward and changing the experience players are going to have with this. Because, you know, if you have a 3-man group, good. You have a 4-man group that can kill it, good. But this also opens up the new opportunity to teach people the boss, or, you know, as some people prefer to do, there are people out there who like to just, you know, pay some money to a bossing group and take them along. Whereas with this now, you could set up a group, and I'm, you know, I don't know. How do you guys feel about boss kills for sale? Obviously, you can't interact with that as an Iron Man, but just how do you guys feel about that?
Not a fan.
All right.
Oh, you can definitely still buy boss leeches on Iron Man.
How do you do that without being able to trade GP?
You get your main character to pay in bonds.
Okay, of course.
Iron Man can accept bonds and then redeem them for membership.
All right, fair enough. Well, how do you feel about it then, in that case? Are you okay with the?
Yeah, I'm kind of against for the most part. I think especially since the change to the Reaper system, how they've disentangled that from the completion escape.
Right.
That I think it sense. Should be less forgivable now. Back then, you could kind of conceivably understand why somebody that had issues with accessibility or maybe the hardware they played on couldn't do those bosses, but still wanted to get the cape. Now it's a bit less critical.
Yeah. And, you know, that's hard to forgive. Another thing David equated this to, and, you know, Tanis, you can tell me how you feel about this. He equated this to kind of what they did with the PVM hub, how it made bossing something that just has fewer barriers. And, you know, we're talking about Solak with this, having fewer barriers. And I'm chuckling because you yeah. and I are never going to be able to take that down on our own. You know, if anything, we need to be carried heavily through that.
Yeah. And I mean, and this is an accessibility update in the way that, like, it opens it up to
more people.
More people, but, like, I would still die just as fast. Like, I will... I'll die as fast with three people as I will with seven. That it don't matter.
Flashbacks to our Elite Dungeon 1 fight?
That was... Yeah.
Yeah. All right. So that's the primary change this week. The skift? Shift from either 2-man or 7-man binary to just automatically scaling with however many that you bring in. And they also brought in a number of other changes this week with this, including defense animations being removed from Solak just to make the fight look smoother. And the reason they did this is because whenever you'd hit the boss, it would have a defense animation, which when you think about it, if you're playing purely visually based, you want to have your boss respond when it's going to do something, when it's going to engage one of its special attacks. And if it's, you know, lurching around and flinching whenever you hit it, it just makes it that little bit harder to see when it's going to release its next big special attack. So that's why they removed the defense animations with this. And they said they did this because a good number of the other MMOs out there have bosses, and those bosses don't have similar defense animation. So it was just, you know, kind of making Solak fit within the industry standard. Also, you can now instantly activate Mirtherial's Cleanse when you enter phase two of the fight. And the idea behind this is that when you're in phase two, and I did ask for clarification on this, when you enter phase two of the fight, you're effectively granted with this aura that debuffs you. And prior to this week, there would be a number of seconds that you would have to wait to activate this cleanse when you entered phase two. And that would reduce the amount of damage that you could do and would increase the amount of damage that you would take. So now if you can initially get to the spot where you can activate the cleanse, you're going to have an easier time with the boss. So once again, another, you know, kind of just polishing up around the edges. It doesn't necessarily make it easier. It just makes it so that you're not necessarily waiting for a time gate on the boss.
It sounds like a bit of a quality of life.
Yeah, that's exactly what it is. And, you know, with this right-click option to start the fight as well. And that's the tip of what we got here for the Solak changes. And I would love to provide you guys with more information on just how many seconds this is going to save, in particular this second bullet point. But I've never killed Solak before, so I unfortunately can't do that. But rest assured from what I've heard from David and others is that, you know, this is just in general a good little fix to have had changed here. So,
well, and I
might have to give it a try now.
Well, see, this makes me wonder if this is going to pave the way in the future, open any doors. Like, have they learned from... I mean, it's hard to call Solak a mistake, but maybe making it locked in at either 2 or 7 was the wrong choice. Like, going forward, will we see the sweet spot of bosses stick around at 3 or 4 mark, either solo or 3 or 4, you know, parties of 3 or 4? Will that be a lesson learned?
Yeah, you know, I think they probably learned a lot with the Elite Dungeons on that being a party of 3.
Probably, and then... You know, one of the reasons that I find it so difficult to ever have gotten into raids is I can't ever find that many people.
Yeah, and let alone you know what I mean. So like, could this be taken?
Yeah, and could this be, you know, taken to a lot of the other places where you could do scalable bossing to reduce the right. number, you know.
And see, that'd be a fun thing to see, I think, as well on this. And, you know, I'd also like to see defense animations removed on all bosses as well, because I can imagine on other bosses how that would help too. So.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not taking as much information in that way, but my question is, like, even like when those are removed, does it have that big of an effect? When, I mean, you click in RuneScape, you don't move anyway. Like,
the problem was that the flinch animation would overwrite other telegraphing animations. Like, if the boss is casting a spell or using an ability,
that's
often you need to be able to react, and the only cue you have is an animation that's then overridden by a flinch.
Okay, that makes more sense though.
It's a definite step forward, and I think as well, you were talking about how it's kind of bringing things up to industry standards, and I think the scaling is exactly that as well. You look at other games like World of Warcraft, for example, and their end game content scales from 10 to 30, so you could bring in any number of people between 10 and 30, and the content would scale appropriately.
And there you have
it. That's awesome.
And in addition to that, and I go back to PVM Hub on this, and this is all about increasing the general viability of PVMing to a wider number of people out there. Granted, yes, we're talking about Solak, which is at the very top of the tree, but even just expanding the base of that top tree a bit is going to help get more people into it, even if it's still very high up there, if that makes sense.
It's also a great way to just kind of deal with a bad situation. Like, if you've got three people and you want to go to a boss, you're kind of limited by which bosses allow three people.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
If you really, really want to do Solak, but you've got three people, you kind of have to tell one of those people to go away or find four other people. And that kind of feels bad for that one person that gets left.
Yeah. And, you know, one of the other good things that's going to happen about this is if more people go back to Solak with this, you'll see Tier 92 start to go down in price. Which, with archaeology around the corner, is something that is inherently going to happen as well. So it's going to allow more people to get those tier 92s in hand, because, you know, whenever there's a new skill coming out, people always liquidate armor and equipment and whatnot for GP. And with more of this Solak goodness coming into game, you can also get more of those into game and further push the prices down and just in general increase the number of T92s that are available for people as well. Which, you know, you're probably saying, who needs a tier 92 weapon? But I can guarantee you, there are people out there who want them who probably don't need that extra power over a tier 90.
Yeah, but come on.
No,
dude.
Seriously, it's only a few percentage.
Do you need a 1969 Camaro? No. Do you want one?
Yeah.
Come on, man. Yeah.
Well, there you have it, I guess. And this just gets more of those into the hands of the players.
Always with an eye on the market there, Shane.
Exactly.
I want to see a Mad Money segment with Shane analyzing the GE with all the soundboards that El Kramer had, too. Sell one!
Well, that's actually happening. You know, you see the prices of weapons and whatnot go down prior to archaeology. You also see bonds going down right now prior to archaeology as well. We're getting away from the Solak and bossing business here. Yeah. But nonetheless, it's just something that happens and has been happening ever since the game came around. And I mean, if we look at the 90-day market on the Nox Scythe, you know, it has gone up about 20 mil since then, but it currently looks to be trending downwards since Double XP weekend. So we'll just have to wait and see what happens over the next number of weeks. But I wouldn't be surprised if the weapons did trend down towards archaeology. Unless, of course, there's something inside archaeology that needs components from disassembly. But we're getting ahead of ourselves here. We don't know what all that's going to be about. Probably starting to make market decisions here that probably aren't in the best. So as people always like to say, don't take market advice from podcasters.
Or if you do, take it a week ago.
Yeah.
Because usually by the time you hear it, it's well too late to act on.
Yeah, and there's certain content creators out there that love influencing the market like that. Anyways, moving on. There's the Ripper Demon pet this week. That was seen in the Epic Game Jam. Yeah, Nips, the Nipper Demon.
Okay.
1 in 30,000 drop chance.
Well, 1 in 1,000 from the elite ones, kind of like the Edomir.
Yeah, I was going to mention on the elite ones, but still, that's minuscule. That's minuscule.
But just to do those, if, you know.
Oh, you remember David's method?
He's got the coolest method I've heard of, but I mean.
It involves the magic cannon.
I don't trust
and constantly
it. I know, like, I just feel
I could do that to get the pet. I feel like I'd be two heads down, white-knuckling the keyboard to even notice that it dropped, making sure I didn't die.
Well, it does say you'll get a parasitic orb on the ground when you get the drop. So, the Nipper Demon pet is out. Also works as a familiar override. Alrighty.
A legendary pet would grab that, right?
Yes, it would, hopefully.
All
right, let's move on to our patch notes this week. A number of them in particular relating to the new player experience in Tutorial Island. And, you know, I'm just going to read through these, and I want you guys to see if you catch the core aspect of what's happening here. So first off, a tutorial pop-up to teach default interaction now appears after character creation if the player doesn't move from the starting coordinate for a while after arrival on the mainland. That's basically teaching that, hey, if you don't know how to move in RuneScape, here's how. Next one.
It's like that little clippy guy on Microsoft Word.
There you go. Next one, a two-step tutorial pop-up to teach camera zoom and rotation controls now appears after the default interaction pop-up or after the player's first conversation with Turiel during the first time user experience, as long as these controls haven't been taught or have otherwise been canceled. And I want you guys to keep in mind what the general upshot of this segment is, because I want to see.
I'm already sensing a theme.
I want to see if you guys catch it. The click to tap or continue button now flashes in the player's first mainland conversation instead of just the first conversation with the RuneScape guide on Tutorial Island. The loot all button is now highlighted for the first time when the player picks up multiple items with area loot. A brief tutorial for the loot window in the backpack now appears when first picking up an item, if guidance system hints are enabled. Leveling up is now introduced the first time a player gains a new level in any skill, if the guidance system is enabled. Moving via the minimap is now introduced when the player starts to be directed away from the Berthorpe Lodestone, if this wasn't taught on Tutorial Island. New players on the Berthorpe first-time user experience that leave Berthorpe and Taverly are now informed of the Lodestone network, so now they know how to return to a safe hub, and a list of repeatable tutorials available from Turiel, Major Mary Rancor, and the Lumbered Sage is now available. This includes several topics salvaged from Tutorial Island, such as the Financial Advisor's Guide to the Economy, and Quest Guide's Introduction to the Quest List. All right. What's the key theme here?
Is this a quiz?
Yeah, it is.
I never did very well with pop quizzes.
All right.
I think it's pretty clear that they've had some feedback from players, especially playing mobile, that they're not being introduced correctly to all the various systems
Bingo.
That RuneScape has. The I'm confused
Bingo.
First player survey response.
That's exactly
what they're trying to address.
There are people who there are people who play their RuneScape account that do not know you can move with the minimap, that they do not know that you can zoom the camera or rotate it. They do not know, some of them, how to use the chat to, you know, skip through conversation. And so on and so forth. Each one of these bullet points here was formed in all likelihood out of something in a focus group or a new player filing a bug report that they were stuck or something to that effect, realizing that, oh, we're not necessarily teaching people the core essentials of the game.
And I think this is really important with mobile at a public launch, kind of around the corner. Yeah. I'm expecting that they're addressing all of these new player feel of the game concerns before that mobile launch.
Yeah, and remember in December of 2018, they said that the new player experience, in particular the tutorial in the starting area, was something that they needed to look at heavily for mobile. And here we have it, combined with the update we had in September to the Burthorpe and Taverley area. So that's what this is hitting on, is that there are just parts of this game that we take for granted. We know how they work. But for a new player, it's like, how do I do this? Can this be used for that? And this is something that players who have been around since 2004 before, like I have, you know, you just take it as second nature. But in reality, for someone who's coming on board, it's a pretty big stumbling block. So this is good that this has been fixed. And this is the kind of stuff that you bring user experience experts on for. And I think this is a tell for me that they have probably hired someone to handle user experience in RuneScape. So that's
good. Oh, definitely. I expect we're going to be seeing more of these sort of fixes in the months to come.
Yeah. And, you know, that's the first thing that jumped out of the page when I read this is, okay, they've finally hired someone to do the user experience stuff. So that's good.
This has been this way for so long.
Exactly. You got to remember.
Just all of a sudden figure that out.
You got to remember
but
that.
But then again, maybe do because of mobile. I mean, maybe mobile bringing in this many more people with fresh eyes was exactly what pointed it out.
Yeah, and you got to remember that a good number of the JMods are people who started playing RS in their teenage years, the ones who they're hiring nowadays. Yeah. So they've been with this game forever too, and you don't think about that. All right, Diango has also received some more work this week, including that skill sets are now displayed while hovering over the skill tab in the Diango interface. Brain plushies can now be retrieved from Diango. Items in the last column of the interface are no longer sliced when resizing the bank interface, because remember, Diango is now an integral part of the bank after the bank rework. When you drag the witch's plushie out from the bank, it now confirms that it can be reclaimed from Diango. That's just something to remember that, you know, hey, the skill sets tab is where you're going to find all those skilling outfits. And, you know, the best way to find a specific one that you're looking for is to search rather than mousing over each one. That's the way I do it. Other changes this week. Dialogue has been added to Mini Morn, the Mini Morn pet. Harkin in the fight kiln will no longer dive immediately when you do over 10,000 damage in a single hit, making the fight less frustrating for high-level players.
Fantastic change.
Yeah.
That'll shave absolute minutes off your kiln times.
Yes.
The Sing for the Lady achievement now lists the full requirements. Empty text space has been removed when examining clue scrolls or the clue caskets held within the Charo's clue carrier. Imps in the God Wars dungeon will now count towards Demon Slayer tasks, which, of course, is the Lanakea cluster assignment. Players are now informed that mummies can only be harmed by fire when attacking them at the end of Desert Treasure.
Seems like a good thing to know.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Now into the bug fixes category. Nomad now does damage in the first Nomad's Requiem cutscene in Legacy combat mode. That didn't happen before, and that's something we don't think about, Legacy Combat Mode. Fixed a minor exploit when fighting the hardcore giant mole. Edge case has been fixed that allowed for the Twin Furies to be killed very quickly. But there's some people who are sad about that, but it's definitely a bug. You can no longer use telekinetic grab on Bloodwood logs. The frozen debuff no longer appears upon re-entering the living wyvern area. And god wines now become fermented when logging in and out and back into the game. Because previously, if you had god wines in your inventory and you logged out, they wouldn't ferment where you were logged out. And you'd just log back into unfermented wine. So that's a good change. The Ultimate Slayer title is now correctly removed if new items have been added to Slayer logs and not yet obtained. using kelp or seaweed on the raw great white shark to make gunkin or maki will now correctly open the sushi section of the cooking interface. I had no idea this was a thing. But I guess
yeah,
this is...
Yeah, it was what the... It came with the aquarium, right?
I thought... Okay, I thought it might have been the Ark.
No, it was the first wave of those foods that heal for a small amount and then more over time, like the Baron Shark.
Oh,
the Great Gunkin and the Great Maki.
All right. Interesting. I've never thought of using those. Have you ever used those?
No, they're not used very often.
I've used a hell of a lot of Baron because you get them
for
free.
Yeah.
From, was it the prawn balls or the squirt? Yeah, one of those things you get them free, yeah.
All right, fair enough. The Berthorpe area logo has been added to the Berthorpe arrival cutscene to better illustrate the meaning of the Berthorpe overlay text.
Have you seen those cutscenes?
No, I haven't. Because...
They're beautiful. I wish they did that all the time or you could turn them back on. It's like a sweeping panoramic view of a city the first time you visit it. That definitely wasn't there when I first started playing.
So this is like new player experience then.
Oh, cool.
Basically.
Yeah, that's still new player experience, yeah.
Wow.
It's just an association they're trying to link up the cutscene and the lodestone symbol.
I guess we should make an Iron Man character, Tannis.
Oh, cool.
Yeah.
I'm hearing a lot of stuff. Thing, right? I'm hearing a lot of, yeah.
Never been a better time.
Achievement and path pop-up messaging and fireworks for completing Tutorial Island no longer occurs when transitioning to Berthorpe for the first time, so it could happen in the middle of that transition, which kind of negates the purpose of having the fireworks. Now, here's an interesting one. Drilling soldiers in the Berthorpe Imperial Guard camp are now dormant when there's no players nearby for better processing efficiency. That's new to me. I mean, I thought it would have just been an animation and there wouldn't have had to be any kind of processing associated with that. But I guess they were doing something behind the scenes. And last but not least, under the known issues category, the ring that denotes how close you are to being caught during Big Game Hunter does not correctly change color like it should.
Pretty big bug.
Yeah.
It's been around for about a week and a half now, I think. And they've put in a temporary fix for it while they try and track down the issue. There's now a number that appears over the top of the creature's head that counts down or back. Yeah.
Okay.
That's their interim fix.
Hmm. All right. I guess that works.
It's something, but...
It's less than ideal for sure.
Yeah, let's get this handled quickly.
Yeah. All right. There's the patch notes for the week. Not too much to write home about there, but the thing that, of course, jumped off the page for me was that the new player experience is tackled in a really meaningful way this week, which, you know, is something we haven't seen in a while, so that's always good.
And that's the core experience team that handles that sort of thing, isn't it?
Yes, I believe so. Not 100% sure, but I believe so. Somebody can correct me if I'm wrong. All right. Speaking of core experience team, they were on the live stream this week. I guess we should move on to that then, shouldn't we?
Yeah.
Oh, boy. Did anybody get really excited seeing this week?
No.
No?
No, I didn't.
Why not?
Because I'm hesitant. Like I'm cautiously optimistic. Because we didn't notice. All right, they cited movement a lot.
Yeah,
we didn't notice movement.
Caching improvements.
So, we didn't notice that. So all the stuff we have not noticed. So if the like this is kind of like the. Substitute for kind of not getting rid of the tick system, getting rid of the tick system, right?
Yes, that's exactly it.
If it works, I think it'll be great. It'll be revolutionary. I don't know.
And,
I don't know, Shane, what do you think? Like, this is so technical that I don't know if it can be done, if it can't.
Well,
I don't know.
I want to start from the top on this one. They also mentioned new rendering materials. Archaeology will make heavy use of it. And they cited the money tree, in-game right now using the new rendering options that they had with that. But there's also something called object outlining, so that, for example, NPCs will be highlighted as yellow, attackable creatures as red, and objects as blue. On the desktop, it'll happen when you move your mouse over it, but on mobile, it will do it within the specific area of where you're walking. They're planning on bringing out a toggle for this, so if you don't like it, you can, of course, turn it off. And, you know, this is something that you and I had many talks about in the past. They're bringing out a colorblind mode for this.
Eventually.
And when I say they were asked about this, they said it's going to be for the entire game.
Yes, eventually.
Which I think that's something we championed, right?
Yes. See, this part, I kind of got an understanding for like how things on live stream can kind of. So he's trying to talk to the dev, right, about
Porky.
If we're gonna have, yeah, Porky's talking to the dev about having a colorblind mode, right? Now the dev is thinking, so technical. He's going through all this stuff in his head, thinking, well, yeah, but I need this and I need that. Da, 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 da. So he's answering it, but it feels wishy-washy when all he had to say is that it's definitely our goal. That's where we're going. I can't give you a time on that, but that's the direction we're going. Now, I know they said they picked these colors because, honestly, they probably Googled it. I can tell you right now, I will mix up red and brown and orange. I cannot tell the difference between those. Yellow and blue and green will all mix up. Cannot tell much of a difference.
And that was my next question for you.
So I really don't know what he's talking about, like, with that. Now, like I said, I'm sure they probably Googled it or something. But what I found frustrating about that was you have special effect right there. Right there. You've worked with them. They're right there.
And I have to say,
write an email.
For me, with someone who wears corrective lenses, and this might have been due to the compression on the live stream, I could barely see the object outlining.
Yeah, I found the same thing.
Okay, do you wear glasses?
I do, yeah.
Okay. And were you watching on Twitch or YouTube?
On Twitch.
Okay, so it wasn't just the YouTube thing. But yeah,
I did have it on a smaller screen. So that might
right, and I even blew it up, and I still subtle. It still seemed very subtle for me as well. So, and you know, that's why we're in this feedback phase here. And Tanis, what colors would you go for then? That would be, you know, like,
see, and that's like, that's what it's,
it sounds
see,
like.
That's
with
what is difficult, though. That is what's difficult because people have there's so many variable color blocks.
You gotta let them configure it. You really do.
Yes. That is the answer, Rasta. And that is how it is in a lot of other games. And that goes to the whole colorblind mode, period.
And that's probably why they're not, you know, making these ones colorblind accessible right now. It's because, we'll have a colorblind mode in the future.
Right, which is why, like, I'm not getting worked up about this. You know, right now, and I do believe 100% they tried.
Oh yeah,
right. I don't know how much. You know, I feel like there are experts available that could have really helped you nail this down. But as long as you nail down the official one that will affect the whole game, you know, I'd rather have that.
All right. So for that one is yellow, red, blue. Okay.
No, you really need to be able to have. No, you need to be able to dial that in. Like, there are different – there's, like, three very well-known – I was going to say popular. But not popular, but there's three types of colorblindness that are most common. You know what I mean? There's the blue-green. There's red and – I forget the other color. There's three of them. Mine is most – well, I got, like, two of the three, so go figure. But – So I have, like, serious trouble. I cannot tell the difference between blue and green.
So basically you'd need something that would allow you to configure it as is.
Well, yeah, like, or at least...
Because you're not one specific type of color blindness.
Yes, exactly. Yep.
And then if they were to add a generic colorblind mode to the game, that might not necessarily work for you.
No, but it would probably work for, you know,
I'm looking out for a good chunk of the population that has this as an impairment.
Yes, I'm looking for the most benefit for the most amount of people, and colorblindness is a hell of a lot more common than what I have. Right. So it may be just fine for that, but I think Rasta is right. The best way, and what I see the industry doing in the games that have it, is they will have the three different types, and then you can turn each one on or off.
Right. Okay.
And I think that's the best way.
That's the best way of doing it. All right. And you know, I think I'll just double down and say that, yeah, this looks like a good idea in theory. It'd just be better if we could have this be a little bit more apparent than it is, because I don't know if it's due to the compression on the Twitch and YouTube, but it was just kind of hard to see. So that's my
feedback. I'd love to try it.
That someone could
see. I think a beta.
Yeah, I think trying it would be good. Would be good as well. So, all right. Next up was object outlining. Canopy cutouts. That was the wrong section of that outs. But the canopy cutouts, so if you're in like a forest or something, you're running through the trees, you'd be able to see your character through it. And
– kidding me.
What?
Well, that's about how many years have we had proof? Because we really needed it when that dropped. Remember, you couldn't see me thieving. The next thing you know, it's just a tree.
Like, yeah, hey. And once again, this one was killed by the compression.
Yeah, I didn't like the look of this one at all. Like, I was also worried. They mentioned that they had to do this individually for each tree model, so that there are certain places that it just won't work in, and that really worries me because that's a lot of tech debt. Yeah.
Oh, wow. Wow. Each individual tree?
Yeah, model. Having to do it case by case is a really, really big job, which means this may just happen initially and then get forgotten.
Is it worth that amount of time?
And the circle that you can see through looks so small.
It's tiny. I don't know how useful that could be. I understand on mobile it's harder to turn the camera.
Yeah.
And that's probably what motivated this decision. But I do see it as a very weak solution.
We're looking
it
at also
like it would
the
be super time consuming.
Yeah.
We got a 3-month arrival time span for this one. Could be looking
I hope they put some time into beta on this one over the next month or two. I think feedback would help them a lot.
Yeah. They went to the Lost Grove in MacGruber's Wood to illustrate it.
MacGruber's Wood. Don't worry. I got it, guys. I'll just clear cut the son of a bitch.
That was amusing,
no
wasn't
problem
it?
No problem seeing when I'm there.
You are, of course, referring to the start of You Are It, looking for the one tree that you have to cut.
Well, aside from that, does anybody ever go to MacGruber's Wood?
There's a clue scroll.
Seems weird that they,
coordinate clue
they
or
didn't
something
demo
there.
It for like Prif or something that's a little bit more hot topic.
I don't know.
That's a good
question. All right. Next up, client prediction, which is what everybody's been wanting for reducing input lag. And, you know, we didn't get the full story on this when they showed it at RuneFest because there's one big if about this. It's going to have to be disabled potentially in areas that are higher paced, like PVM or PVP, because you can't anticipate what the boss or the person's going to do. So the question that they asked is that would players still be interested in getting movement prediction if it meant that it was only usable in the base game and in skilling areas and not in PVM?
I think so. I think we're going to get a big outcry if we can't use it in PVM, but I think for skilling in general, it's going to make the game feel a lot smoother.
Yeah, and I mean, all you have to do is you look at the video on this and you see just how much smoother it is.
I want this. I mean, I want this to work. I mean, I really want this to work. But I also have to wonder, like, why are we taking this, like, about way getting?
What do you mean?
Getting to it. It just seems like I always thought input lag and all that. I always thought that came from it's because of the ticks.
It is.
Like, yeah. So and this is an abstraction of that to hide it away. Exactly.
Right, but why is it there to begin with? Why are we governed?
That's the way the game was built.
And like Motto is born
the work
said,
required
you
to
need
develop
to start
the change
over.
Would be huge. Yeah. It's a ground up rebuild to re-engineer that tech system. This is a low effort way of making it seem like we're not running.
Well, relatively low effort, you know, when you're talking about the engine, nothing's low effort.
Compared to a
rework. So what will this do for like all of the, like, will we have to invent new training methods stuff, you know, cause like, like two tick cooking or is it one ticking at the Guthix's?
It's not going to do anything to those. This is movement. If you're standing still to train, you're not going to notice it.
It's only for moving.
This is your character moving from square to square.
Yeah.
See,
so basically the way it was described is that when you click to move on your screen, it sends that request to the server. The server calculates the path, sends it back to you, and your character moves.
So this would be most beneficial for PVM, and that's the one place where it ain't going to work.
Well, they said it could potentially not work because you might miss some animations. It would effectively have the chance of introducing rubber banding to RuneScape, which is common in other games. Basically, basically what they did is they said the client needed more information than it gets right now to make this happen. And the biggest challenge for this entire project was knowing when the player wasn't allowed to move because the server doesn't know whether a person's going to be allowed to move until that next square of movement happens, because any kind of content or scripting game can just automatically put a stop to players moving. So that was their biggest bottleneck for this one. Now, using the most up-to-date information that your client has, the client will predict one tick's worth of movement, and then confirmation and correction is done once your character actually moves there. They say most times it works as expected, but if it doesn't, it'll rubber band you back. That's the video game terminology that we would see in other areas with this. And this has nothing to do with the dead clicks that players perceive. That's a separate issue, they said.
Well, gee, I just went from being kind of excited to meh. Doesn't sound like it's going to have any effect
so it's
on
not
me
gonna,
at all.
It's not going to affect... You know, it's not going to make PVM responsive like people have wanted it. It's just going to make the game look better.
Yeah, and that's who I think this is targeted at. Remember, this is the core experience team. I think this is based on feedback from new players that the game feels slow and unresponsive.
Because, you know,
their way of trying to address them.
If you look at what was done in this showcase here, you watch people move around, and you compare that to just, you know, your regular character moving and how your player zigzags back and forth, this one now is a lot more natural in terms of movement. So, just like with Smoothment.
And it's about how the game feels, not necessarily how it performs.
Right. And then the question is, you know, would this be an option to have the players turn it off if they didn't want it on for PVM? Or would Jagex just make the blanket decision to turn it off for PVM?
I can understand.
That sounds like under the hood stuff.
It really makes sense to me.
What, to turn it off?
Like, yeah, to turn it off for PVM
for everyone,
because it's that really sad feeling you get where you click out of an effect like fire on the ground, and you see your character move out of the fire, and then it kills you because the game still thinks you're back where you were when you sent the packet. It's that desync that you get that really, really
and
it
makes
comes it
down
feel
to
like
tick and ping.
It's not your fault.
Exactly.
Yeah, it really does.
And this ain't going to do anything for that.
Not at all. Even worse, it's going to mask it. So it's going to seem like everything's fine until it isn't.
Yeah, and you know, when things go haywire or you have a bad internet connection, you're going to get rubber banding. which, I mean, you decide what you want. Do you want the delay in your character moving, or do you want rubber banding?
I choose neither. I don't know. Can I?
I think Jagex might as well.
And, you know, I was initially very excited about this when seeing it, but I'm starting to think that, you know, if this isn't going to be a game-wide solution, it's going to be on and off at different times. I just think that it shouldn't happen.
It pains me to say that. Add another layer of confusion.
It pains me to say that, but I think that's the way it's got to be.
I think even if you don't have it at PVM, I think the value to the new player might be enough to justify it. Making the game seem more responsive when taking your first steps in the world. Because that's a common complaint that I've heard even.
Yeah, definitely.
From new players.
Your character can't move.
Yeah. Why is it taking so long to respond?
Especially if you can move with the minimap. Because I never even see my character move. I'm staring at my map when I click. You know, I never... But rarely am I clicking around the actual character.
And you know what they also said? They said as this has been being worked on, server performance issues have been found. And these are being worked on. And lower population worlds make it better. So in addition, if you want the best experience, lower population and lower ping.
Oh yeah, but let's get rid of a bunch of worlds and cram everyone together. Won't that make sense?
Did you guys see the video on this, actually? There was somebody on Double XP Weekend who noticed significant slowdown on one of the portable worlds.
Yeah, they mentioned that.
He took a video of himself fletching. It took, the interface, the MakeX interface said, 92 seconds or something, but it actually took more than 2 minutes to finish that transaction.
I had major issues on portable worlds during next Double XP Weekend. True.
So I think, if nothing else, that's a big win to come out of this core experience development, to find server issues and improve server performance.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely. All right, let's move on to RS Mobile then, because that's, of course, what everybody wants to hear about, right? So they had another mobile demo, this time on an iPhone 7 Plus, and I was impressed.
I think it's coming, Shane. I think it's coming.
It's going to be a while still, I think. But
really?
Yeah.
Yeah, it'll be a while.
Yeah.
Apple or iOS have limited duration beta periods.
And you're capped to 10,000 only in total. So it's going to be a while. They're right before launch, they'll do it. The iPhone 7 came out in 2017, I believe it is. That's a year, right? I'm trying to remember.
You're the Apple guy.
Yeah, I am. No, 2016 is the iPhone 7. And it ran very smoothly on the device from that year. So that's very good for iOS users out there, I think. And the things that they said they're still working on the iOS side are the compliance issues, which is dev speak for making sure that Apple will accept the app. Because one example they gave is that you can't have desktop terminology in your application. So everywhere that it says click on the desktop, it should really be tap or press on the iPhone. They also need to.
That was the stupidest show I've ever heard.
They also need to implement sign in with Apple.
It's a great example, though. I love that example because I've heard a lot of people talking about compliance with iOS, and they've mistakenly attributed that to iOS not allowing things like microtransactions.
Yeah, that's what I took
making
it.
Visible the odds and things like that. But there's a lot more
Apple
to compliance.
Apple is really, really, really picky with their requirements on the App Store. So
it's good to see under the hood a little bit and see what kind of hurdles that Apple is making them go through to get it out there, that it's not just them being lazy about iOS.
Yeah.
Is why we don't have it yet.
They reiterated that the full mobile launch will happen this year. There have been some ways with the, or some issues with the way that the iOS client communicates with the server in terms of the way the iOS app is built. So that's what they're working through. In regards to full mobile launch being this year, my guess now at this point is that we'll see a beta in the summer with the full launch being at RuneFest.
full launch meaning iOS?
iOS and Android out of beta.
Yeah, they'll definitely do it at the same time, I think.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Because you do that at the same time to capitalize on the marketing and whatnot. They also
taking that timeline. That seems reasonable.
They also showed off chat notification messages for whenever you get a chat message in, and the chat box is hidden, as well as daily challenge notifications, so that if you get a new daily challenge available or you complete one, there will be a little notification that will pop up to it. And when you tap it, it will guide you through the menus to get to the daily challenges interface, which is something that the game has needed for years. And it's good they're pioneering this with mobile. They did say it has the potential to appear on the desktop, but they're only doing it for mobile right now, because we all know how cumbersome the top RS UI can be if you don't know what you're doing. So it's important to kind of get that wayfinding around for people who are new to the game. And this called this the start of the system to tutorialize menus. They test on the latest iOS version and one or two back for it, which really isn't a problem on iOS, because if you have a modern iOS device and you get the updates, you know, I think Apple's had something like 80% of people are on the most recent version of iOS. So it's not as big of a deal as it is on the Android side. They were asked about vertical mode for typing in the chat. That's not happening. They also illustrated how the chat box will fade out after receiving a message in its medium-sized box, and then you can expand it there to the large chat size box if you want. Then somebody asked in the Q&A, can we have disappearing chat on desktop? And the answer to that was no, because, you know, there's just too many different chat tabs and whatnot, whereas mobile only has a single chat box. So that was the gist of the stream, I think. I don't think we learned too much new on mobile. That's kind of the way I was leaning for the roadmap as to when we'll get it. I think we're going to see it at or around RuneFest, and based on what we saw in the camera size, it looks pretty good on the iPhone 7 Plus, and, you know, makes me really happy that I have an iPhone 8 Plus, because I still think that's the best iPhone Apple ever made.
Yep, I'm on a rocket till it dies.
Yeah, me too, I think. Unless the new one that comes out soon is appealing to go down a size. Alrighty. Anything else about the live stream, or should we move on?
No, I think that's it.
All right. I don't have anything else. Rasta, you good?
Yep, I'm good.
Alrighty. We're going to move on to our listener questions, but before we do that, I'd like to thank our Patreon supporters for this month, because, you know, as we mentioned at the start of the show, we just got off recording of the monthly bit, and, you know, these episodes are truly amazing to record. So thank you so much for everybody who makes all of these episodes possible. So this week I'd like to thank, we don't do this monthly, we do this weekly. I'd like to thank 29 Let's Go, Brock H, Cameron, Cass, Christian S, Diana, Jade Gizmo, James W, Jason S, Joe M, John P, Kyle, R Memories, Rastafa, Rippeth, Sam W, The Naked Captain, The Lion, Tom V, Zachary K, and Zez. Thank you all of you for your support. It truly does mean the world to us here at RSBNB Update. And, you know, we did hit that tier for movie night at RSVNB, so we'll be providing Patreon subscribers information on that in the next week or so about just exactly when that will happen and how it will happen. But if you're wanting to learn more about this, just head on over to patreon.com/RSVNB. For as little as $1 a month, you get a special mention in our show notes and early access to them. You also, of course, help fund the cost for hosting and production of RSVNB Update. And most importantly, you gain access to the entire back catalog of monthly bits. So with that being said, lots of good ones in there, whether it be this month's on the Iron Man gameplay experience or last month's on Negative Cycles, it's all there. For $3 a month, you receive a special VIP rank on the Discord and a mention on the podcast at the start of the month. And for $5 a month, you receive a shout-out each and every week on the podcast, and you get exclusive access to the outtakes that we use for the clip show. And in case you're wondering what else you get with this, we got the monthly bit, which we just recorded. It's an amazing special on Iron Man. We also have an inside RSBNB update, which will arrive at the end of the month. The round table, which we just did on Double XP weekend. And, of course, movie nights. So I'll just say to everybody out there who is interested in considering Patreon, watch the space, because there's a very good chance that we could be making some additions to this as we move forward and beyond. So once again, thank you to everybody for your support. Visit us at patreon.com/RSBNB. Thanks so much, everyone. All right. We got a question this week from Sunset Fish, and this is one that I would love to answer in the affirmative, but we'll just see if I'm able to. And that question is, should all quests moving forward be repeatable with additional rewards, or should that just be saved for the mini quests? How do you feel about quests, Rasta?
I enjoy doing quests once. As soon as it comes to repeating a quest, I'm kind of in space bar mode. Having said that, I agree with this. I think this is a great thing. I would definitely support repeatable quests, mostly for those people that take breaks from the game and forget what the lore is.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
How about you,
Thomas? That's a really good point. So I am for this for a few different reasons. One, I feel like quests are one of the things that take a considerable amount of dev time, and yeah, it's done in an hour. Yep. Yep. And that sucks when, you know, they might work on it for 6 months or something like that. So I would like to see replayable quests. And like Rasta said, yeah, it would be great to refresh, you know, the story and your memory. Where I differ is, I don't think it needs the rewards after the first time. In fact, kind of rather there weren't any after the first time through. That the repeatable nature would basically, it's just so that you could go through it, or so you could go and help one of your friends through it, you know, at the same time.
Yeah, yeah.
That to me is would be like the highlight of having that. But I would be in favor of it, just because it's just so much time and development goes into them. And most people spacebar through it anyway. Those who are trying to read it, I mean, it's still one and done. So, you know, it's like that feeling when you get all worked up and you're enjoying something and it's all great and then it's over and you're like, okay.
It's not a TV show you can go back and watch again.
Right, yeah.
Exactly. And they do already have a repeatable quest in the game, Broken Home. And it does offer rewards for re-completing. Oh, and Needle Skips is re-completable?
Endgame?
Is Endgame, yep. But Broken Home is kind of a bottle quest. I think making the more story relevant, like the lore heavy quests, the ones that are part of sequences, repeatable would be higher priority in my mind than the bottle quests.
Yes. I would agree. Like, could you imagine if we could replay
World Wakes or something?
Yeah, while Guthix sleeps, like that whole storyline all the way to Endgame. Yeah, where you got to see, like, that would be amazing.
And I agree, you wouldn't need rewards. As soon as you introduce rewards, you've got people comparing how fast it is to do the quest versus the reward that you get and spamming it for rewards. You can just ignore all of that and only give it to the people who actually care about the lore.
I would absolutely love for quests to be replayable, but recall that when they made the entire Vampire series replayable, 13 people did it, and I knew 4 of them.
Well, you know they say that.
Yeah.
But look at the update. See, this, I wanted to bring this up earlier. Look at the update we got this week. Now, how many people actually do Solak at all? Now, how many of those people are affected by that update. You know what I mean? If the bar is participation, then let it be an even across the board bar. Don't let it be like, well, it's okay for PVM, but it's not okay for questers. Because I don't think that's fair.
Yeah. And, you know, you might even need a different genre of quest to make this feasible. Because every quest that we've had in game and the way that the quests are designed from the engine perspective and the ground up are designed to be completed just once. So you might need a different kind of narrative story driven thing that you could put into the game that would be repeatable and designed to be that way going forward. I don't know what you would call that in RS, but other games have mechanics for that. Just, you know, like imagine little encounters in another MMO where you get little nibbles of the story here and there. That might be something that they could do instead with this, because, you know, the question always is would you rather have more quests or would you rather have more involved quests? And more involved quests, of course, could mean epic on the scale of, you know, the blockbusters that we had in the Sixth Age, or it could mean voice-acted quests, or it could be quests that are repeatable. Or in that same amount of time, would you rather have two quests instead of just one? And that's a question that needs to be answered. And given the drought of quests we've had, I know where I fall on that side of the equation. And that's more quests.
See, I disagree. I would trade five quests for a voice-acted quest. And I
have for voice-acted, yeah.
Even if you guys only got one a year? Without a doubt.
If it was voice-acted?
Even if you only got one a year?
Oh, for voice-acted, yeah. I will give up anything for that. I mean,
just to be clear, yeah. Voice-acted quests are done. You know, we've asked that question to Jagex. They're done. Yeah. They're gone. They're sailed. We're just saying and using that as an example.
You know, I think another example, though, that I hope at least is feasible. They may have said no before, but we have a grouping system now, right? Like, how cool would it be if you could group you and a partner together to do quests?
You used to be able to do that before they were instanced.
Well, but even if they're instanced, like, that's what I'm saying with the grouping system, like, bosses are instanced. If you're in a grouping system with someone, it could take you right in. Like, that would be so cool to be able to do, you know, especially, I mean, I think that would be fun. I think it would be a lot funner to do it with a friend rather than, you know, bungling.
Oh yeah, definitely.
So. And yeah, you can do that in a lot of other games too.
For sure. Yeah. Yeah, you absolutely can.
And you know, just to cut to the chase, because I don't think I've given an answer here, but the definite answer is yes. I would like it if they were repeatable. I just don't think we're going to get that. I would also like what you just said, if you could have it instanced with someone, if you wanted to go in and do a quest together, because it gives you a reason to play RuneScape with someone, which is how you used to be able to do quests, and I would love to get back to that.
Yeah.
So, I think the answer is yes. It's just a question in our own fantasy world that this is how it would be, and unfortunately, I don't think it's going to happen. Any of this, whether it be the voice acting or the repeatability or the instancing with friends.
Well, I mean, it's not high on their list, but if we were to get anything, I think it would be replayability in a new quest.
In a new quest, definitely. Not in the old ones. Yeah.
No, not in the old ones.
And
We're wrapping up the Sixth Age. This could be going into whatever age we're into now. Age Aquarius. I don't know. But, you know, moving forward, might be able to do that.
Yeah. Fair enough. And yeah, I think more mini quests would be good too. You know, just since we're on that bandwagon. Thank you, Sunset Fish. You know we like questing here. So thank you for that question. If you guys want to send your own questions in, you can email them to questions@rsbnb.com, or you can leave them on the forum thread at update.rsbnb.com/ask. All right, into tech news we go. And for my friends here with me on the podcast, I did find a piece of late tech news that I missed. So we do have that third piece of tech news there. But we're going to start off with Apple paying up to $500 million to settle a U.S. lawsuit over slow iPhones. And, of course, this was the Apple case where people said they slowed down older iPhones in order to make it feel as though their phones were getting older. And, you know, if your phone's getting slower, you assume it's due to its age, and you're going to want to get a new iPhone from it. But they found that that they were actually being slowed down. And many people, on the Apple side at least, chalked it up to saying, hey, we're just throttling the phone because the phone can't get enough power from its old battery. So that's why we're doing it. That's what they chalked it up to. They chalked it up to a battery issue, and this, of course, spawned a number of changes within the software to make it so that you could see just how good your battery was in terms of its health, and a wide-sweeping new battery program for, I believe it was, the iPhone 7 series and the 8 series in order to combat this. But this lawsuit, having it been passed, calls for Apple to pay consumers $25 per iPhone, which could be adjusted up or down depending on how many iPhones are eligible, with a minimum total payout of $310 million. Apple, of course, denied the wrongdoing in this case, but with this being a settlement, means that they will indeed be paying out money to people who were affected by this. And this covers U.S. owners of the iPhone 6, 6 Plus, 6S, 6S Plus, 7 Plus, 7, or iPhone SE. So not the 8, but it was that old dependable line of iPhones there. And you know, many people in this day and age, if you have an iPhone 6 or even an iPhone 7 today, that's still a good enough iPhone, assuming you got a good battery in it to run pretty much everything that you need. And I know many people who still run an iPhone SE as well. So there we have it. This was confirmed.
Naughty, naughty. Apple
needs to pay up. But that wasn't me. Did you have any of those, Tannis?
I had a 6 Plus, but I don't know when this... I think I had a 6 Plus in 2000.
It was 16? It was iOS 11.2 later before December 2017. So you would be susceptible. Oh. You would be within this.
Yeah. Yeah, okay. Well, yeah, I guess I never...
You're going to get a little bit of a payout.
I never noticed anything.
Well, it's probably because your device was still new.
Yeah, well, yeah, you're probably right.
But, you know, I think this is also why we've seen in the last number of years that whenever a new version of iOS comes out, it supports devices all the way back to the SE. Proving that, you know, it's not an issue of the device being able to run it. It's just Apple's chosen path. And the fact we saw the newest version of iOS still run all the way back to the SE speaks volumes on this. And, you know, I think this story was probably glossed over in the larger tech media this week because many people in the media prefer not to report negatively on Apple. And that's why we're talking about it right now.
Well, one of the things that jumped out from me reading this article was that the damages that the lawyers are seeking for their legal fees is $93 million. That's how much it costs to sue Apple.
Yeah.
But the thing is, like, this is nothing to them. And that's why, like, I don't know. I feel like penalties need to be a lot severe, because when it comes to a class action like this, each person is getting very little compensation.
Yeah, it's like
the power behind class action is in the deterrence to make companies think twice about doing the wrong thing. But they're never going to think twice if they got pockets like Apple with $300 million. That's the price of doing business. You know how much they probably made on the phones that people thought were junk that they had to buy new ones? Hell of a lot more than $300 million. Price of doing business.
Makes me wonder if we're going to see new models of iPhone come out with exclusive operating systems because they don't want to offer support to previous models anymore?
That's a good question.
I want to say no because that would fragment the iOS marketplace.
But that's the direction this precedent is moving in. That's the next logical step to Apple to protect their assets.
Or they could just deny services because, you know, they are becoming a services-based company. They could say that if you want to be able to utilize our newest service, whatever it might be announced this year, you got to have an iPhone 11 or higher. And, you know, there's actually a funny story on this one. On the Mac OS side, when they were developing AirDrop, which is the little piece of software on Mac OS and now iOS that lets you send files between your devices, they developed it on one of the machines, one of the Mac Pros, that was initially designed with its software to not support AirDrop. But the machine fully supported it. So that was just a case of saying, you know, we only want this group of machines and hardware to be able to support this piece of software. So they have definitely done that before. And I think that's more their more likely route is to just, you know, kind of wall out areas of their of the operating system for that instead of, you know, having an exclusive OS. All right. I want to move on to our next piece of tech news, which goes back to two of the giants of the initial push in Silicon Valley many, many years ago, Xerox and HP, which, you know, could you imagine in tech news in 2020 that we'd be discussing Xerox and HP? Because what's happening here, Xerox is making a hostile takeover bid for HP. Yeah. HP, the company that made all those laptops that were filled with crapware, is potentially at risk of being taken over by Xerox, the company known for photocopiers, but perhaps more importantly, one of the first user interfaces in computers many, many years ago. So it was learned that a number of months ago, 10 months ago in particular, Xerox began what they're calling a battle for control of all of the shares in HP. What they did is they pitched HP investors on it's called a cash and stock offer worth $24 a share. And for each HP share, a holder would receive $18.40 in cash and 14 cents or so, or 15 cents or so in Xerox shares. So 0.149 Xerox shares. This would expire on April 21st, this offer. And it would be the question, of course, would be, do HP shareholders want to accept this $18.40 in cash and 0.14, almost 0.15 of a Xerox share for this instead? And with this, they say it would yield about $2 billion in cost saving and more than $1 billion in additional revenue growth for both companies. And, you know, this goes back to two hardware companies that started off in Silicon Valley, and lo and behold, here we are. They're still battling it out this year for that price.
See, I mean, while it is an interesting story, it's also an example of corporate consolidation. When they talk about cost savings, what they really mean is we're going to fire a bunch of people, and we're going to move this shit to China.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's the same thing that happened to
their... That's what they're saying. I mean, that's what we're saying.
That's the same thing that happened to Compaq in the 1990s when I think HP bought them as well. I think that's where Compaq went to. Somebody can correct me if I'm wrong. You guys remember Compaq, the computer maker?
Oh, yeah. My first laptop was a Compaq.
There you go. But, yeah, they disappeared in a similar way to this. And, you know, Xerox Chief Executive Officer, CEO John Vicenten said that our proposal offers progress over entrenchment, and HP shareholders will receive $27 billion in immediate upfront cash while retaining significant long-term upside through equity ownership in a combined company with greater free cash flow to invest in growth and return to shareholders. And there we have it, 10 business days for HP to look over this. And I think it'd be rather unfortunate if this were to happen because, you know, with this, there's a chance that the HP brand could disappear. And that's, for all intents and purposes, a legend in computing. So,
town.
I hope this doesn't go through. But there's, I think, a very good chance that it will with this.
Well, that's the trend. I mean, like I said, I'm very skeptical of that kind of consolidation.
Yeah.
I think it's good. But at the same time, you know what? Xerox holds a special place because that was the first thing to take a picture of my butt in the teacher's lounge.
Really?
In my high school. Yeah, we didn't do mass shootings back then. We did mass moonings, and what's better than a Xerox picture of your ass?
Oh, God. Woo! Oh, God. You can't be serious.
I'm serious as a heart attack, dude.
Oh, my God.
Totally did that. Printed off about 100 copies.
Okay. All right. Moving on. Moving on. Twitter
only cost one Saturday school.
Twitter has a new piece of technology for their tweets called ephemeral fleets.
Huh?
Ephemeral fleets. They're bringing out something called the fleet. The idea behind this is that it's going to be similar to the Instagram and Snapchat stories, and you can put stuff out on this new tweet that's effectively called a fleet, and it will disappear after 24 hours.
It's fleeting.
Yeah. It can't receive likes or replies or retweets, but you can still share, and they're going to be trialing this in Brazil.
Huh?
Uh-huh.
Seems like an odd place to start.
Well, it's a smaller market, but it's still a busy market, and that's kind of what you want to do with these things. And, you know, you can visit someone's profile and look at their fleets, even if you don't follow them, as they say. So just like Snapchat.
But, see, I feel like Twitter is basically like celebrities, professionals, and then people that want to bitch. And that's pretty much all I ever see. Mostly bitching.
Like Reddit with more celebrities.
Yeah, like if it's a pie chart, like the bitching section would be like 2/3 of it, you know? Everything else.
Well, we saw that last week in RS.
Well, we see it from time to time in RS, yes. Yes, we do.
And I mean, I guess the good part about with fleets is that you wouldn't need to have that constantly as a part of your timeline, effectively archived here with this. I don't know.
Yeah.
Like, is this really what Twitter needs going forward?
I don't know what Twitter needs going forward. I feel like an old fogey
talking about all this new social media technology. I don't see any of it as necessary. I guess that's a sign of getting old.
Maybe the benefit, as you said, it's like not about retweets or likes, so which actually tells me that it's probably not going to be used. Because I mean, come on, if you can't, have people like it or retweet it, then what's the point? Hello.
Yeah.
You know, because I feel like that's half of what is written on Twitter. It's just, oh, like it, like me, retweet me. Like, I don't know.
Could have those fake internet points.
Donald Trump run Twitter.
I think it was well before that. It was well before that.
Probably right.
It was well before that. They're going to appear in an icon format, a circular icon format, just like Snapchat does, except they're going to be at the top. Also, you'll be able to post videos in it for up to 2 minutes and 20 seconds long. And whitelisted publishers will be able to post videos for up to 10 minutes in length. You know, I see an opening here for us. This could be our new format for the Weekly Byte in addition to YouTube, if we can get them done in under 2 minutes 20.
Yeah, that's true. Doesn't Twitter also allow adult content?
Yes, it does, but...
Don't accidentally have that pop up in your feed there, Shane.
Yeah.
You'd be looking like old Brett Hume with his vinyl vixens and stuff.
Oh, I think on Twitter you've got to mark your whole account as sensitive.
Yeah.
To be able to share any kind of sensitive media.
And, you know, there is the option as well to make sure that it doesn't appear in your feed if you want it. I just wish that kind of same thing applied in TweetDeck as well, because that's my main client, which is, of course, owned by Twitter. But, venturing off. And, you know, the reason They said the reason they chose Brazil is because it will help them to better understand if fleets help users become more comfortable sharing on Twitter, which is a big problem in public social networks.
So why are you going to pick a country that is under the control of an authoritarian right now? Yeah, they're going to be more likely to share until the Gestapo comes to take them away. Way to go.
Well, that's
kind of it appeals to that, doesn't it?
Yeah.
It's the whole self-destructing message concept that even if they come knock down, kick down the door and haul you off, there's no evidence of.
And they probably want to try it in a dictatorship, but you really can't get into those countries like Venezuela and whatnot. So, I don't know. I'm interested. I want to see what happens with this. All right. We do have some achievements this week for Double XP Weekend, which, you know, not as many as last week, but still, once again, I want to highlight our page on our website where you can go there and you can see all of the XP side of Double XP Weekend Extended. Just for a bit of a summary here overall, the top gainer was the Lion with 100.8 million XP, or 108 million XP in total. Thaxi is in second with 101.5, and Tim 2 in first with 91 million XP.
Damn.
Yeah.
Nice gains.
And so you can just go to this page and, you know, sort by skill, or you can filter between RSB and B and Clan Quest amongst others. Did you know that Tim got 71.8 million Dungeonary XP on Double XP Weekend Extended?
That's a lot.
Yeah, it really is.
That is a huge chunk of the skill.
Another one I want to highlight is that Arcane, otherwise known as Dave, our guy who wrote our wonderful music here, got 65 million Herblore XP over the week, over the 10 days.
Nice.
Yeah.
Best way to go if you had the cash.
All right, let's shoot through some of these achievements. Not as many as last week. I think our people were more active in the first weekend of Double XP Weekend Extended, but nonetheless, what do we got for us here?
Well, starting off our achievements, we got Chalk Barrage with 99 smithing on March 3rd. Then we have Guy Lee Flair Floor with 99 wood cutting on the 2nd. Alex Peaks with 99 herb lore on the 3rd. Alex Peaks again with 99 strength on March 1st. Alex Peaks with 99 prayer on March 1st. Daydreamer with 99 construction on March 1st. Photomachus with 120 attack on March 1st. Jag 3 Dagster with 99 fletching on the 1st. We have Love Natural with 99 fletching on March 1st. We have R3PO with 120 defense on the 1st. We have Robbie with 120 fletching on March 1st. We have Schwarmton with 99 mining on March 1st. We have Tim 2 with 120 dungeoneering on March 1st. And Ultra Dog 177 with 99 ranged on March 1st.
Nicely done. Moving on to the 29th, we have Arcane with 120 herblore. That's what I was just pointing out. Nicely done. Badger with 99 fishing, also on the 29th. Black Mexican with 99 prayer. Daydreamer with 99 smithing. Elven Badass with 99 thieving. Minority with 120 attack. Vodka B with 120 prayer on the 29th. Then moving on to the 28th, we have Alex Peaks with 99 crafting and 99 hunter. Delta with 99 cooking. FE Super J with 99 invention. Hemsky with 99 fishing. Izant with 99 firemaking. Madhouse C with 99 defense. Malinoric with 120 invention. Peachy Reborn with 99 strength and 99 attack. Then Whitey with 120 herblore, rounding out the 28th.
Then on the 27th, we have 1RYB with 99 dungeoneering. Black Mexican with 99 slayer and 99 agility. Jaguar 007 with 120 Dungeoneering, Peachy Reborn with 99 Smithing and 99 Slayer, Pony Picker also locking on 120 Dungeoneering on the 27th, and then on February 26th we had Badger with 99 Slayer, Canard with 120 Farming, Dr. Bruce with 99 Hunter, Izant with 99 Hunter, Jag3 Dagster with 99 Construction, Lorosaurus with 99 Slayer, and R3PO with 99 Cooking.
Nicely done. Yeah, it wasn't too bad, was it? We got through that, and I'm sure we'll I'll talk about what we did for our double XP weekend goodness as well. But before we do that, I'll ask Tanis about this wonderful, wonderful pick of the week.
Well, thank you, Shane. I have a pick. And I also have the pleasure of saying this pick has been banned in China.
Must be a good pick then.
It's a pretty good pick. So do you have any dark sense of humor at all, Shane?
Yes, absolutely.
You might need it to get the pick. But this week, if you ever heard of a little game called Plague Inc.
Definitely. I always follow what gets banned in China.
Well, it's fun as hell. I've had it for a year or two now, and basically it has a bunch of different categories, and you unlock these, you know, as you go through the different parts of the game. But you're basically trying to infect the world and kill everyone off with either, you know, with a bacteria or a virus or a nano plague. You can turn everyone into the Borg. You can give everyone the simian flu, so we turn into Planet of the Apes. There's, fungus. There's parasites. There's all kinds of cool stuff, right? And so, yeah, the name of the game is basically the goal of the game is to try to infect everyone while, you know, the people are trying to research a cure to stop you.
See there's one for a bioweapon as well.
Yes. Just for shits and giggles this week, I think it was to try to... You ever try to, do something just in the face of a fear to try to make yourself feel better?
Not really.
I've been all worked up about this. I've been all worked up about this Corona stuff, right? So I'm like, you know what? I'm going to try to kill everybody with Corona, and then maybe I'll feel better. And, you know, I did. I did, and it only took 524 days, but I got every last one of the 7
wow.
billion.
Wow.
God, I'm done. Even named it. Here's the fun part. You can name your virus, and then you can share it on Twitter. And then when it goes out on Twitter, it says, whatever you named it has killed, you know, the entire population. It's fun.
Available on both iOS and Android, I see, so that's good.
Yeah, and it's only, I think it was $15 when I looked this week, because when I saw it was banned, I'm like, oh, I hope this gets to be the pick of the week, because it's so fun anyway. Like, it's a great game anyway, but...
It's 99 cents in Canada on the iOS App Store. Number one in simulation apps, yeah.
Wow, that's...
It looks to be free on Play.
Yeah, it is free on Play.
It's fun. I don't know. I like it. And especially now, like I said, I started my virus in China, and it spread rather quickly, and a lot of fun. I don't know.
Yeah.
It's just a fun look. We're all going to get it anyway. So.
Yeah, and you know, with that, I said, you know, we're very lucky that it's not as severe as other ones like MERS or SARS, so that's good. In that it's not, you know, killing upwards of 20% of the people. It's actually not as deadly as some of the other ones. I'm talking about coronavirus now, of course. But I think my general sense that I'll tell people on this one is that I personally don't believe it's something to be worried about. I think you have more to be worried about from the seasonal flu. Granted, this passes around a lot more easier, but I think this, you know, if you're a healthy person, you should be fine. I think.
Yeah, and I mean, there's not that many of you up there, Shane, in the frozen north. I mean,
yeah.
Unless it infects reindeer, you guys are probably okay.
No, we already got the first presumptive case in Alberta today already.
Oh, for real?
Yeah. There's some in Toronto and Vancouver, of course. That's where they fly in from. But nonetheless, it's here and it'll start spreading soon. So,
well, get Plague Inc. and see if you can make a game out of it. Yeah. That's what I did.
All right.
And I felt better.
Alrighty. What have you been up to this week on RS Rasta? I mean, I guess this is also doubling as your double XP weekend segment, so go for it.
Well, double XP weekend doesn't really mean anything to me on an Iron Man account. But,
true. Sorry.
This week and the last month or so, I've been trying to finish off 200 mil smithing just before Archaeology comes out. That's another one that I'd gotten 120 a couple of years ago, but never actually rounded out to 200 mil. So I'm at about 180 mil now, and I do look to be on track to finish that by Archaeology release.
By Archaeology release. That's going quick.
Wow. Yeah, it's pretty quick to do. Usually every 3 or 4 days, I can lock in about 6 mil smithing XP. But of course, I've got to gather the ores.
Right.
So I get days that are just blank.
Mm. Well, if anybody wants to hear about that Iron Man experience, there's a monthly bit for that. That's coming out in concert with this episode. Anything else you'd like to share?
Just that I'm really excited for Archaeology.
I can't wait
to hear the next couple of live streams and figure out what it entails.
Yeah, me too. How about you, Tanis?
Yeah, I'm really excited for Archaeology as well.
I mean, what have you been up to on RS?
So, double XP weekend, this was so weird. I think I'm going to write about this because I was pretty active over the weekend, right?
Sure.
But I don't think I had ever spent that amount of time and got that much double XP ever. Like, as for time. Like, on a normal weekend, I would always hang out, and I loved watching people do their crazy stints and their 200 mil. Like, I loved watching it. It was never something that, like, I would try, but man, if I get tired, I'm taking a nap. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Like, yeah, I mean, that's just how
it's
I am.
Young man's game.
Yes. So I always enjoyed the culture and I enjoyed the feeling and the festiveness, but I actually spent more double XP time playing in this week than I've ever, not this week, but you know, last week than ever.
You gained 50.8 million XP.
Yeah.
18.1 of that in defense. What were you doing?
I had done all the pre-arranged stuff, so I went and finished off some attack. I think I had like 10 mil to get to 120. Or no, strength.
Yeah, strength. 6.3.
So while I was there, I was just like, well, let's just switch to defense. I was out of money. I was out of resources. You know, I couldn't keep going Herb Lore. I had finished off my summoning. I hit that 120. So I'm just like, well.
Yeah, 9.5 in summoning, 7.7 in Herb Lore.
Yeah, so those were the little ones compared to the.
Do you want to tease what you're going to be writing about with this?
You know, I think, yeah, it's just that how it is the end of an era. But so while it. I want to talk about the dichotomy between how hardcore people are probably getting less time, but the casual player is probably playing harder than they've ever played before for double XP. Because I know I did. Because I might not be able to put in no 8-hour, 10-hour shift, but you know what? I put 3 or 4 hours in the evening every night religiously. I can do that.
And of course, splitting 48 over 10 days, that's 4.8 hours a day. So there you go. You're going to be using it all up.
Exactly. Whereas I don't think I really did before. And this is something that I never really... I mean, I thought about it, but I never considered it in this way. I had to like live it and see it for it to make sense, you know?
All right. Well, that should be an interesting read. As for me... this weekend and double XP weekend extended, I got 5.8 million woodcutting XP And, you know, I did some crystallized, but I've just figured, okay, I'm done spending on soul runes for this right now. So I just went to my Arc Islands and was getting around 600, 650k XP an hour there doing golden bamboo.
Nice.
With, of course, the cinder cores and bonus XP active and all the other good stuff associated with that. I also got a couple of invention levels. I got about 4 million XP invention. That was about worth 2 levels in proteins and siphons from the hatchet. So that was good. Nice. And that was pretty much my double XP weekend extended activities. But since then, I have gone back to Prif, and I've actually started thieving there because I want to complete my outfit for my camouflage outfit. Because, you know, that's just something. I never did, and I'm around 5 pieces away from that, so that's 18k token fragments. I'm halfway there, so we'll get that done before archaeology and then kind of just coast for a bit, because I think we're all gonna want to be busy when archaeology arrives, right? So just got to kind of take it in and go in with a bit of a breather. At least that's the way I'm taking it.
After that, we all need about I'm telling you, we need a week. Need a week to reset after the extended double XP.
Yeah. And you know, that's what I also did with the Informer schedule this month. I gave us a bye week at the end of the month so that, you know, we'll just have
a bye week. I love it.
We'll just have a week to do whatever we need to do for RS, you know, no articles, and hopefully there won't be anything too intensive in the week leading up to archaeology here for it, but that's the way we're taking it here, because, you know, covering a new skill launch from the podcast and from the website perspective is a big deal, so we gotta take it nice and slow. But
yeah, you got a lot of stuff to get arranged on the
website. Yeah, definitely. But that's that, and that wraps up this episode of RSBNB Updates. So I'll just say thank you to Rastafa for joining us as well, and for those who have access to it, the monthly bit with you on Iron Man is also very good as well. So all of that more at patreon.com/RSBNB. But for those of you guys listening to this, if you want to subscribe, just visit update.rsbnb.com/subscribe, and you can subscribe to the podcast and a number of podcast listeners out there, from Apple Podcasts to Google Play to Spotify, Pocket Cast, YouTube. All of that is there, update.rsbnb.com/subscribe. You can also join our Discord by going to rsbnb.com/discord. And, of course, the French chat is Bits Bytes. So with that being said, we'll see you guys all next week for another episode of RSBNB Update. Take care, everyone.
See ya.
See ya.